and spoiled? I smile at her and nod. Sydney. Well, thanks. I try. Me. I don't mean for this to come off as insensitive, but if your father is a lawyer and you still have a relationship with your parents, why did you not call them last week when you had nowhere to go? Sydney. The primary thing my mother instilled in me was the fact that she didn't want me to be her. She had no education and has always been completely dependent on my father. She raised me to be very independent and financially responsible, so I've always taken pride in not asking for their help. It's hard sometimes, especially when I really need their help, but I always get by. I also don't ask for their help because my father would point out in a not-so-nice way that if I were in law school, he'd be paying for it. Me. Wait. You're paying for school on your own, but if you changed your major to pre-law, your father would pay for it. She nods. Me. That's not really fair. Sydney. Like I said, my father is an asshole. But I don't go around blaming my parents for everything. I have a lot to be thankful for. I've grown up in a relatively normal household. Both of my parents are alive and well, and they support me to an extent. They're better than most, just worse than some. I hate it when people spend their entire lives blaming their parents for every bad thing that happens to them. Me. Yeah, I completely agree. Which is why I was emancipated at 16. Decided to take my life into my own hands. Sydney. Really? What about Brennan? Me. I took him with me. The courts thought he stayed with my parents, but he moved in with me. Well, with Warren. We've been friends since we were 14. Both of his parents are deaf, which is how he knows ASL. Once I became emancipated, they allowed me and Brennan to stay with them. My parents still had guardianship over Brennan, but as far as they were concerned, I did them a huge favor by taking him off their hands. Sydney. Well, that was incredibly considerate of Warren's parents. Me. Yes, they're great people. Not sure why Warren turned out the way he did, though. She laughs. Sydney. Did they continue to raise Brennan after you left for college? Me. No, we actually only stayed with them for 7 months. When I turned 17, I moved us into an apartment. I dropped out of school and got a GED so I could start college sooner. Sydney. Wow, so you raised your brother? Me. Hardly. Brennan lived with me, but he was never the type who could be raised. He was 14 when we got our own place. I was only 17. As much as I'd like to say I was the responsible, mature adult, I was quite the opposite. Our apartment became the hangout for everyone who knew us, and Brennan partied just as hard as I did. Sydney. That shocks me. You seem so responsible. Me. I wasn't as wild as I probably could have been, being on my own at that young an age. Luckily, all our money went to bills and rent, so I never got into any bad habits. We just liked to have fun. Our band was formed when Brennan was 16 and I was 19, so that took up a lot of our time. That's also the year I started dating Maggie, and I calmed down a lot after that. Sydney. You've been with Maggie since you were 19? I nod, but don't text her back. My food has hardly been touched from all the texting, so I pick up my burger. She does the same, and we eat until both of us are finished. We stand up and clear off the table, and she gives me a wave and heads off to her room. I sit on the couch and turn on the TV. After about 15 minutes of channel surfing, I finally stop on a movie channel. The captioning has been turned off on the TV, but I don't bother turning it back on. I'm too tired to read and follow along with the movie anyway. The door to Sydney's bedroom opens, and she walks out, looking slightly startled when she sees I'm still awake. She's in one of her baggy shirts again, and her hair is wet. She walks back to her room, then comes out with her phone and sits on the couch with me. Sydney. I'm not tired. What are you watching? Me. I don't know, but it just started. She pulls her feet up and rests her head on the arm of the couch. Her eyes are on the TV, but my eyes are on her. I have to admit, the Sydney who went out tonight is a completely different Sydney from the one lying here. Her makeup is gone. Her hair is no longer perfect. Her clothes even have holes in them. And I can't help but laugh just looking at her. If I were Hunter, I'd be punching myself in the face right now. She's beginning to lean forward for her phone when she cuts her eyes in my direction. I want to look back at the TV and pretend she didn't just catch me staring at her, but that would make this even more awkward. Luckily, she doesn't seem to care that I was looking at her because she gives her attention to her phone. Sydney, how are you watching this without captions? Me, too tired to read along right now. Sometimes I just like to watch movies without captions and try to guess what they're saying. Sydney, I want to try it. Put it on mute and we'll deaf watch it together. I laugh. Deaf watch. That's a new one. I point the remote to the TV and press the mute button. She turns her attention back to the TV, but once again, I fail to look away from her. I don't understand my sudden obsession with staring at her, but I can't seem to stop. She's several feet away. We aren't touching. We aren't speaking. She isn't even looking at me. Yet the simple fact that I'm staring at her makes me feel incredibly guilty, as if I'm doing something wrong. Staring is harmless, so why do I feel so guilty? I attempt to talk myself out of the feelings of guilt, but deep down, I know exactly what's happening. I don't feel guilty simply because I'm staring at her. I feel guilty for how it's making me feel. This makes twice in a row I've been woken up like this. I push away the hand that's slapping me and open my eyes. Warren is standing over me. He slaps a piece of paper on my chest and whacks his hand against the side of my head. He walks to the front door and grabs his keys, then leaves for work. Why is he going to work this early? I pick up my phone and it says 6 a.m. I guess he's not leaving early. I sit up on the couch and see Sydney still curled up at the other end, sound asleep. I pull the paper from Warren off my chest and look down at it. How about you go to your room and sleep in the bed with your girlfriend? I wad up the note and stand, then take it to the trash can and bury it. I go back to the couch, put my hand on Sydney's shoulder, and shake her awake. She rolls onto her back and rubs her eyes, then looks up at me. She smiles when she sees me. That's it. All she did just now was smile, but all of a sudden my chest is on fire, and it feels as if a wave of heat just rolled down the entire length of my body. I recognize this feeling, and it's not good. It's not good at all. I haven't felt this way since I was 19, since I first began developing feelings for Maggie. I point to Sydney's room to let her know she should go to bed, then quickly turn around and head into my bedroom. I pull off my jeans and t-shirt and softly slide into bed next to Maggie. I wrap my arms around her, pull her against my chest, and spend the next half hour falling asleep to a broken record of reminders. You're in love with Maggie. Maggie's perfect for you. You're perfect for her. She needs you. You're happy when you're with her. You're with the one and only girl you're meant to be with.
Chapter 10. Sydney. It's been 2 weeks since Ridge and I have worked on lyrics together. A few days after Maggie went home, Ridge ended up leaving for 6 days because of a family emergency. He was vague about what the emergency was, but it reminded me of when I still lived with Tori and he was absent from his balcony for several days. A family emergency was his excuse then, too. Based on conversations I've heard Warren have on the phone with Brennan, I know it didn't have anything to do with Brennan. But he's never mentioned having family other than Brennan. When Ridge returned a few days ago, I asked him if everything was okay, and he said things were fine. He didn't seem to want to share any details, and I'm trying to remind myself that his personal life is none of my concern. I've immersed myself in school, and every now and then, I'll attempt to write lyrics on my own, but it isn't the same when I don't have the music to go along with it. Ridge has been home for a few days now, but he spent most of his time in his room catching up on work, and I can't help but wonder if he's kept his distance for other reasons. I've been hanging out with Warren a lot and have learned more about his relationship with Bridget. I haven't had any more interactions with her, so as far as I know, she still assumes I'm deaf. Based on what Warren has told me, their relationship is anything but typical. Warren never met Bridget before she moved in 6 months ago, but she's a longtime friend of Brennan's. Warren says that he and Bridget don't get along at all, and during the day they live separate lives. But at night, it's a completely different story. He has tried to go into more detail than I care to hear, so I force him to shut up when he begins to overshare. I'm really wishing he would shut up right now, because he's in the midst of one of his oversharing moments. I have to leave for class in half an hour, and I'm trying to finish reading a last-minute chapter, but he's intent on telling me all about last night and how he wouldn't let her take her Hooters uniform off because he likes to role-play, and oh my God, why does he think I care to hear this? Luckily, Bridget walks out of her room, and it's more than likely the first time I've ever been happy to see her. "Good morning, Bridget," Warren says, his eyes following her across the living room. "Sleep well?" "Screw you, Warren," she says in return. I'm beginning to understand that this is their typical morning greeting. She walks into the kitchen and glances at me, then at Warren, seated next to me on the couch. She narrows her eyes at him and turns toward the refrigerator. Ridge is at the dining room table, concentrating on his laptop. "I don't like how she's up your ass all the time," Bridget says with her back to me. Warren looks at me and laughs. Apparently, Bridget still assumes I can't hear her, but I'm not finding much humor in the fact that she's talking shit about me. She spins around and eyes Warren. "You think that's funny?" she says to him. "The girl obviously has it bad for you, and you can't even respect me enough to distance yourself from her until I'm out of the house?" She turns her back to us again. First, she gives Ridge some sob story so he'll let her move in, and now she's taking advantage of the fact that you know sign language so she can flirt with you. "Bridget, stop." Warren isn't laughing anymore, because he can see how white my knuckles are clasped around my book. I think he's afraid Bridget's about to get hit upside the head with a hardback. He's right to be afraid. "You stop, Warren," she says, turning back around to face him. "Either stop crawling into bed with me at night, or stop shacking up on the couch with her during the day." I drop my book onto my lap with a loud slap, then kick my feet up and down against the floor out of frustration, anger, and flat-out annoyance. I can't put up with this girl for another second. "Bridget, please," I yell. "Shut up! Shut up, shut up, shut up! Christ, I don't know why you think I'm deaf, and I'm definitely not a whore, and I'm not using sign language to flirt with Warren. I don't even know sign language. And from now on, please stop yelling when you speak to me." Bridget cocks her pretty little head, and her mouth hangs open in shock. She silently stares at me for several seconds. No one in the room makes a move. She turns her attention to Warren, and the anger in her eyes is replaced with hurt. She immediately looks away once the hurt takes over, and she heads straight back to her room. I glance over to see Ridge staring at me, more than likely wondering what the hell just happened. I lean my head back against the couch and sigh. I was hoping that would feel good, but it didn't feel good at all. "Well," Warren says, "there goes my chance to act out all the role-playing scenes I've been imagining. Thanks a lot, Sydney." "Screw you, Warren," I say, understanding a little bit where Bridget's attitude comes from. I slide my book off my lap and stand up, then walk to Bridget's door. I knock, but she doesn't open it. I knock again, turn the knob, and push the door slightly open to peek inside. "Bridget?" A pillow meets the back of the door with a thud. "Get the hell out of my room!" I ignore her and open the door a little further until I can see her. She's sitting on her bed, with her knees pulled up to her chest. When she sees me coming into her room, she quickly wipes her eyes, then turns the other way. She's crying, and now I feel really shitty. I walk to her bed and sit on the edge of it, as far out of her reach as possible. I may feel bad, but I'm still scared to death of her. I'm sorry, I say. She rolls her eyes and falls back onto the bed in a huff. You are not, she says. I don't blame you, I deserved it. I tilt my head. Did she really just admit that she deserved it? I'm not gonna lie, Bridget. You are kind of a bitch. She laughs softly, then folds her arm over her eyes. God, I know. I just get so annoyed with people, but I can't help it. It's not like it's my goal in life to be a bitch. I lie back on the bed with her. So don't be one, then. It takes way more effort to be a bitch than it does to not be one. She shakes her head. You can say that because you're not a bitch. I sigh. She may not think I'm a bitch, but I sure have been feeling like one lately. For what it's worth, I'm more evil than you might think. I may not express my feelings in quite the same fashion as you, but I definitely have evil thoughts. And lately, evil intentions. I'm beginning to think I'm not as nice as I always thought I was. Bridget doesn't respond to my admission for a few quiet moments. She finally sighs heavily and sits up on the bed. Can I ask you something? Now that I know you can actually answer me. I sit up too and nod. Are you and Warren? She pauses. You guys seem to get along really well, and I was curious if... I smile because I know where she's going with this, and I interrupt her string of thought. Warren and I are friends, and we could never be more than friends. He's sort of oddly infatuated with this bitchy Hooters waitress he knows. Bridget smiles, but then she quickly stops smiling and looks straight at me. How long has Warren known that I thought you were deaf? I think back on the past few weeks. Since the morning after I moved in? I wince, knowing Warren's about to experience the side of Bridget we all know too well. But please go easy on him, Bridget. As strangely as you two show it, he really does like you. He might even love you, but he was drunk when he said that, so I don't know for sure. If it's possible to hear a heart stop, I just heard hers come to a screeching halt. He said that? I nod. A couple of weeks ago, we were leaving the club and he was wasted, but he said something about how he's pretty sure he might love you. I probably shouldn't be telling you this, though. She drops her eyes to the floor and is quiet for several seconds, then looks back up at me. You know, most things people say when they're drunk are more accurate and honest than the things they say when they're sober. I nod, unsure if that's a true fact or just a Bridget fact. She stands up and walks swiftly to the door, then swings it open. Oh no, she's about to kill Warren, and it's partly my fault. I stand up and rush to the door, prepared to catch the blame for telling her what Warren said. However, once I reach the living room, she's swinging her leg over his, sliding onto his lap. Warren's eyes are wide, and he's looking at her in fear, which tells me this isn't one of her usual moves. Bridget takes Warren's face in her hands, and he hesitantly brings his hands to her lower back. She sighs, staring him hard in the eyes. I can't believe I'm falling in love with such a stupid, stupid asshole, she says to him. He stares at her for several seconds while her comment registers, and then his hands fly up to the back of her head and he crashes their lips together. He scoots forward and stands with Bridget wrapped around him. Then, without breaking for air, he takes her directly to his bedroom, where the door shuts behind them. I'm smiling, because Bridget is more than likely the only girl in existence who could pull off calling someone an asshole and in the same breath confess her love. And oddly enough, Warren is probably one of the few guys who would find that appealing. They're perfect for each other. Ridge. How in the hell did you pull that one off? I was waiting for her to come out here and strangle him. You spend 2 minutes with her and she's all over him. Me. She's actually not as bad as she seems. Ridge.
Really?
Me. Well, maybe she is, but I guess I admire that about her. She's true to herself.
Ridge smiles, sets his phone down, and drops his eyes back to his laptop.
There's something different about him now. I can't pinpoint exactly what it is, but I can see it in his eyes. He looks distraught, or sad, or maybe just tired. He actually looks like a little bit of all three, and it makes me hurt for him. When I first met him, he seemed to have everything together. Now that I've gotten to know him better, I'm beginning to think that's not the case. The guy standing in front of me right now looks as if his life is a mess, and I haven't even begun to scratch the surface.
Ridge, I'm still a little behind on work, but I should be caught up by tonight. If you feel like running through a new song, you know where to find me.
Me. Sounds good. I have an afternoon study group, but I'll be back by 7.
He smiles half-heartedly and heads to his room. I know I'm beginning to understand most of his expressions. The one he just shot me was definitely a look of nervousness.
Ridge. I assumed she didn't feel like riding tonight when she didn't show, and I told myself I was okay with that. However, it's a few minutes past 8, and my light just flickered. I can't ignore the rush of adrenaline pumping through me. I tell myself my body is having the reaction it's having because I'm passionate about writing music, but if that were the case, why don't I get this excited when I write alone? Or with Brennan? I close my eyes and gently lay my guitar next to me while inhaling a steady breath. It's been weeks since we've done this. Since the night she let me hear her sing, and it completely changed the dynamic of our working relationship. That's not her fault, though. I'm not even sure if it's my fault. It's nature's fault, because attraction is an ugly beast, and I'll be damned if I don't conquer it. I can do this. I open the door to my bedroom and step aside while she comes in with her notebook and her laptop. She walks confidently toward the bed and drops down on it, then opens her laptop. I sit back down and open mine. Sydney. I couldn't pay attention in class today because all I wanted to do was write lyrics. I wouldn't let myself write any, though, because it comes so much better when you play. I've missed this. I didn't think I would like it at first, and it made me nervous, but I love writing lyrics. Love, love, love it. Let's go. I'm ready. She's smiling at me and giddily patting her palms against the mattress. I smile back as I lean against the headboard and begin playing the opening to a new song I've been working on. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm hoping that with her help, we'll make some headway tonight. I play the song several times, and she watches me some of the time, then writes some of the time. She uses her hands to tell me to pause or back up or move on to the next chorus or to restart the song altogether. I keep a close eye on her while I play, and we continue this dance for more than an hour. She does a lot of scratching out and makes a heck of a lot of faces that I'm not sure convey that she's having any fun. She eventually sits up and tears the paper out of the notebook, then wads it up and tosses it into the trash can. She slaps her notebook shut and shakes her head. Sydney. I'm sorry, Ridge. Maybe I'm just exhausted, but it's not clicking right now. Can we try this again tomorrow night? I nod, doing my best to hide my disappointment. I don't like seeing her frustrated. She takes her laptop and notebook and starts to walk back toward her bedroom. She turns back around and mouths, "Good night." As soon as she disappears, I'm off the bed and digging through the trash can. I pull out her wadded-up sheet of paper and take it back to my bed and unfold it. Watching him from here, so far away, want him closer than my heart can take. I want him here, I want, maybe one of these days. I want him here, maybe someday. There are random sentences, some marked out, some not. I read all of them, attempting to work my way around them. I run for him, if I could stand. I'd run for you if I could stand. But I can't make that demand. I can't be his right now. Why can't he take me away? But I can't make that demand. I can't be his right now. Reading her words feels like an invasion of her privacy. But is it? Technically, we're in this together, so I should be able to read what she's writing as she writes it. But there's something different about this song. It's different because this song doesn't sound like it's about Hunter. This song sounds a little like it could be about me. I shouldn't be doing this. I should not be picking up my phone right now, and I should definitely not be contemplating how to persuade her to help me finish this song tonight. Me. Don't be mad, but I'm reading your lyrics. I think I know where your frustration is coming from. Sydney. Could it be coming from the fact that I suck at writing lyrics and a few songs is all I had in me? I pick up my guitar and head to her bedroom. I knock and open her door, assuming she's still decent since she just left my room 2 minutes ago. I walk to her bed and sit, then grab her notebook and pen and place her lyrics on top of the notebook. I write a note and hand it to her. You have to remember the band you're writing lyrics for is all guys. I know it's hard to write from a male point of view since you're obviously not male. If you stop writing this song from your own point of view and try to feel it from a different point of view, the lyrics might come. Maybe it's been hard because you know a guy will be singing it, but the feelings are coming from you. Just flip it around and see what happens. She reads my note, then picks up the pen and shifts back on her bed. She looks at me and nods her head toward my guitar, indicating that she'll give it a try. I scoot off the bed and onto the floor, then stand my guitar upright and pull it against my chest. When I'm working out chords to a new song, it helps to play this way sometimes so I can feel the vibrations more clearly. I close my eyes, lean my head against the guitar, and begin playing.
Chapter 11. Sydney. Oh God. He's doing that thing again. The mesmerizing thing. When I've seen him play his guitar like this in the past, it was before I knew he couldn't hear himself play. I thought maybe he just played this way to get a different angle on the strings, but now I know he does it so he can feel the music better. I don't know why, but knowing this makes me love watching him even more. I should probably be working on the lyrics, but I watch him play the entire song without once opening his eyes. When he finishes, I quickly glance down to my notebook because I know he's about to open his eyes and look up at me. I pretend I'm writing, and he flips his guitar around the correct way, then leans back against my dresser and begins playing the song again. I focus on the lyrics and think about what he said. Ridge was right. I wasn't thinking about the fact that a guy would be singing them. I was focused on pouring my feelings onto paper. I close my eyes and try to picture Ridge singing the song. I try to imagine what it would be like to be honest about what I'm feeling for him and use that to take the lyrics a little further. I open my eyes and cross out the first line of the song, then begin rewriting the first verse. Watching him from here, crossed out. Seeing something from so far away. Get a little closer every day. Thinking that I want to make it mine. I think the real reason I'm not able to write tonight is that every line that ends up on paper is about Ridge, and I know Ridge will be able to see through it. He pulled the lyrics out of the trash and already read through them, so he has to have an idea. Still, he's here, wanting me to finish the song. I focus on the second verse and try to keep his advice in mind. I'd run for him, crossed out you, if I could stand. But I can't make that demand, crossed out. What I want, I can't demand, 'cause what I want is you. I continue to go through the lyrics on the page, crossing out the old lines and changing them up, as Ridge plays the song several times. If I could be his, I would wait, crossed out. And if I can't be yours now, I'll wait here on this ground, till you come, till you take me away. Maybe, someday. Maybe, someday. The page becomes messy and hard to read, so I set it aside and open my notebook to rewrite everything. Ridge stops playing for a few minutes while I transfer everything onto the new page. When I look up at him, he points to the page, wanting to read what I've written. I nod. He walks to the bed and sits next to me, leaning in toward me to read what I've got so far. I'm extremely aware that he might see right through the lyrics and know they have more to do with him than with Hunter, which causes panic to course through my veins. He pulls the notebook closer to him, but it's still on my lap. His shoulder is pressed to mine, and his face is so close he could probably feel my breath against his cheek if I were breathing. I force my eyes to fall where his have, onto the lyrics rewritten across the page on my lap. I try to ignore what you say. You turn to me, I turn away. Ridge picks up the pen and marks through the last line, then tilts his head to face me. He points the pen at himself and makes a writing motion in the air, indicating that he wants to change something. I nod, full of nerves and fear that he doesn't like it. He presses his pen to the paper next to the lyrics he crossed out. He pauses for a few seconds before writing and slowly turns to face me again. His expression is full of trepidation, and I'm curious about what's causing it. His eyes fall from mine, slowly grazing over me, until his attention is back on the page. He inhales and carefully exhales, then begins writing the new lyrics. I watch him write out the lyrics to the entire song as I follow closely along, deciphering the new lyrics he adds in himself. Maybe, someday. Seeing something from so far away, get a little closer every day, thinking that I want to make it mine. I'd run for you if I could stand, but what I want I can't demand, 'cause what I want is you. Chorus. And if I can't be yours now, I'll wait here on this ground, till you come, till you take me away. Maybe someday. Maybe someday. I try to ignore what you say. You turn to me, I turn away. But Cupid must have shot me twice. I smell your perfume on my bed. Thoughts of you invade my head. Truths are written, never said. Repeat, chorus. You say it's wrong, but it feels right. You cut me loose, then hold on tight. Words unfinished, like our song. Nothing good can come this way. Lines are drawn, but then they fade. For her, I bend. For you, I break. Repeat, chorus. When he's finished writing, he sets the pen down across the paper. His eyes turn to mine again, and I don't know if he's expecting me to respond to what he just wrote, but I can't. I'm trying not to allow myself to feel as if there's any truth behind his lyrics. But his words from the first night we wrote together flash through my head. They're your words, Sydney. Words that came from you. He was telling me then that lyrics have truth behind them because they come from somewhere inside the person who wrote them. I look back down at the page. For her I bend, for you I break. Oh my God, I can't. I didn't ask for this. I don't want this. But it feels so good. His words feel good. His closeness feels good. His eyes searching mine make my heart go haywire, and for the life of me, I can't figure out how something that feels like this can be so wrong. I'm not a bad person. Ridge isn't a bad person. How can two good people who both have such good intentions end up with feelings derived from all the goodness that are so incredibly bad? Ridge's expression grows more concerned, and he pulls his gaze away from mine and picks up his phone. Ridge, are you okay? Ha, am I okay? Yeah, That's why my palms are sweating and my chest is heaving and I'm clenching the sheet beside me on the bed so I don't do something to him with these hands that I'll never forgive myself for. I nod, then gently push him aside as I stand up and walk to the bathroom. I shut the door behind me and lean against it, closing my eyes and silently repeating the mantra in my head that I've been repeating for weeks now. Maggie, 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 Maggie.
Ridge. After several minutes, she finally walks back into her bedroom. She smiles at me, walks to the bed, and picks up her phone. Sydney. Sorry, I felt sick. Me. You okay? Sydney. Yeah, just needed water, I guess. I love the lyrics, Ridge. They're perfect. Do we need to run through them again, or can we call it a night? I really would like to run through them again, but she looks tired. I'd also give anything to feel her sing them again, but I'm not sure that's a good idea. I already beat up my conscience enough while I was writing the rest of the lyrics down. However, the fact that I was more than likely writing about her didn't seem to stop me because the only thing on my mind was the simple fact that I was actually writing. I haven't been able to write lyrics in months, and in just a matter of minutes, it was as if a fog lifted and the words began to flow effortlessly. I would have kept going if I didn't feel I'd already gone way too far. Me. We'll call it a night. I'm really happy with this one, Sid. She smiles, and I pick up my guitar and head to my room. I spend the next several minutes transferring her lyrics into the music program on my laptop and filling in the guitar chords. Once it's all entered, I hit send, close it out, and text Brennan. Me. Just sent you a very rough draft with lyrics. I really want Sydney to hear this one, so if you have time this week to work up a rough acoustic, send it over. I think it'll be good for her to finally be able to hear something she created come to life. Brennan. Looking at it now, I hate to admit this, but I think you were right about her. She really was sent to Earth just for us. Me. Starting to seem that way. Brennan. Give me an hour. Not busy, so I'll see what we can work up. An hour? He's sending it tonight? I immediately text Sydney. Me. Try not to fall asleep. I might have a little surprise for you after a while. Sydney. Okay. 45 minutes later, I get an email with an attachment from Brennan that says, rough cut, maybe someday. I open it on my phone, find a set of earbuds in the kitchen drawer, and head to Sydney's room. She opens the door after I knock and lets me into her room. I walk over to sit on her bed and motion to the spot on the mattress beside me. She looks at me questioningly, but walks to the bed. I hand her the earbuds and pat her pillow so she lies down and places them in her ears. She continues to watch me warily, as if I'm about to pull an elaborate prank on her. I scoot down next to her and prop myself up on my elbow, then hit play. I set the phone down between us and watch her. A few seconds pass and her head swings in my direction. And oh my God, passes her lips. And she's looking at me as if I've just given her the world. And it feels pretty damn good. She smiles and puts her hand over her mouth as her eyes fill with tears. She tilts her face back up to the ceiling, more than likely because she's embarrassed by her emotional reaction. She shouldn't be. It's exactly what I was hoping to see. I continue to watch her as she listens, and her face conveys a mixture of emotions. She smiles, then exhales, and closes her eyes. When the song ends, she looks at me and mouths, again. I smile and hit play on my phone again. I continue to watch her, but the second her lips begin moving and I realize she's singing along to the song, my smile is washed away by a sudden emotion I didn't expect to feel at all. Jealousy. Never in all my life and in all my years of living in a world of silence have I wanted to hear something as much as I want to hear her sing right now. I want to hear her so bad it physically hurts. The walls of my chest feel as if they're closing in on my heart, and I don't even realize that my hand has moved to her chest until she turns to me, startled. I shake my head, not wanting her to stop. She nods slightly, but the beat of her heart against my hand is increasing by the second. I can feel the vibration of her voice against my palm, but the material between my hand and her skin hinders my ability to feel her the way I want to. I move my hand upward until it's at the base of her throat, and then I slide it up even further until my fingers and palm are flush against her neck. I scoot closer to her so that my chest is pressed against her side, because the overwhelming need to hear her has completely taken over, and I don't allow myself to think about where the invisible lines are drawn. The vibration of her voice stops, and I feel her swallow as she looks up at me with the exact emotions that inspired most of the lines in this song. Say it's wrong, but it feels right. There's no other way to describe how I feel. I know that the way I think about her and feel about her is wrong, but I struggle so much with how right it feels when I'm with her. She's no longer singing. My hand is still wrapped around her throat, and her face is tilted toward mine. I slide my hand a little higher until it's grazing her jaw. I run my finger around the cord to the earbuds and pull them away from her. I return my fingers to her jaw, slowly slipping my hand behind her neck. My palm conforms so perfectly to the back of her head, it's as if my hands were made to hold her like this. I gently pull her toward me, and she turns her body slightly toward mine. Our chests meet, and it creates a force so powerful that every other part of me is demanding to be pressed against every other part of her. She reaches her hands up to my neck and lightly places her palms against my skin, then slowly eases her fingers up and into my hair. Having her so close feels as though we've created our own personal space, and nothing from outside our world can make its way in, and nothing from inside our world can make its way out. Her breaths fall in waves against my lips, and although I can't hear them, I imagine they sound like how a heartbeat feels. I let my forehead fall against hers, and I feel a rumble from deep within my chest rise up my throat. The sound I feel past my lips causes her mouth to open in a gasp, and the way her lips are slightly parted causes my mouth to immediately connect with hers in search of the relief I desperately need. Relief is exactly what I find the second our lips meet. It's as if every pent-up, denied feeling I've held toward her is suddenly uncaged, and I'm able to breathe for the first time since I met her. Her fingers continue to sift through my hair, and my grip tightens against the back of her head, pulling her closer. She allows my tongue to slip inside and find hers. She's warm and soft, and the vibrations from her moans begin to leave her mouth and flow straight into mine. My lips softly close over hers, and then I part them, and we do it all over again, but with less hesitation and more desperation. Her hands are now running down my back, and my hand is slipping to her waist, and my tongue is exploring the incredible way hers dances against mine to a song only our mouths can hear. The desperation and speed at which we're escalating this kiss make it apparent that we're both attempting to get as much out of each other as we can before the moment ends. Because we both know it has to end. I grip her waist tightly as my heart begins to tear in two, half of it remaining where it's always been, with Maggie, and the other half being pulled to the girl beneath me. Nothing in my life has ever felt so good yet hurts so achingly bad. I tear my mouth away from hers and we both gasp for breath as the desperate grip she has on me keeps me locked against her. I refuse to allow our mouths to reconnect as I struggle to figure out which half of my heart I want to save. I press my forehead to hers and keep my eyes closed, inhaling and exhaling in rapid succession. She doesn't attempt to kiss me again, but I can feel her chest as her movements change from begging for breath to fighting back tears. I pull back and open my eyes, looking down on her. Her eyes are shut tightly, but the tears are beginning to fall. She turns her face and covers her mouth with her hand as she tries to roll onto her side, away from me. I lift up onto my hands and look down at what I've done to her. I've done the one thing I promised her I would never do. I just made her a Tory. I wince and drop my forehead to the side of her head and press my lips against her ear. I find her hand and reach for the pen beside us on the nightstand. I turn her hand over and press the tip of the pen to her palm. I'm so sorry. I kiss her palm and crawl off the bed and back away, She opens her eyes long enough to look at her hand. She makes a tight fist and pulls her hand to her chest, then begins to sob into her pillow. I take my guitar, my phone, and my shame, and I leave her completely alone.
Chapter 12. Sydney. I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to go to class. I definitely don't want to go job hunting again. I don't want to do anything but keep this pillow pulled over my eyes, because it's creating a nice barrier between myself and every mirror in this apartment. I don't want to look in the mirror, because I'm scared I'll see myself for who I really am this time. A girl with no morals or respect for other people's relationships. I can't believe I kissed him last night. I can't believe he kissed me. I can't believe I broke into tears the second he pulled away from me and I saw the look on his face. I didn't think it was possible to cram so much regret and sorrow into one expression. Seeing how much he regretted being in that moment with me was one of the biggest blows my heart has ever taken. It hurt worse than what Hunter did to me. It hurt worse than what Tori did to me. But as much as it hurt seeing the regret on his face, it was nothing compared to the guilt and shame I felt when I thought of what I had done to Maggie, what he had done to Maggie. I knew the moment he put his hand on my chest and moved closer to me that I should have flown off the bed and made him leave the room. But I didn't. I couldn't. The closer he moved and the longer we stared at each other, the more my body was consumed by need. It wasn't a basic need, like a need for water when I'm thirsty or a need for food when I'm hungry. It was an insatiable need for relief. Relief from the want and desire that had been pent up for so long. I never realized how powerful desire could be. It consumes every part of you, enhancing your senses by a million. When you're in the moment, it enhances your sense of sight, and all you can do is focus on the person in front of you. It enhances your sense of smell, and suddenly you're aware of the fact that his hair has just been washed and his shirt is fresh out of the dryer. It enhances your sense of touch and makes your skin prickle and your fingertips tingle, and it leaves you craving to be touched. It enhances your sense of taste, and your mouth becomes hungry and wanting, and the only thing that can satisfy it is the relief of another mouth in search of the same. But the sense my desire enhanced the most? Hearing. As soon as Ridge placed the headphones in my ears and the music began to play, the hair on my arms rose, chills erupted from my skin, and it felt as if my heart rate slowly conformed to the beat of the song. As much as Ridge craved that sense too, he couldn't experience it. In that moment, all of his other senses combined failed to make up for the one sense he desired the most. He wanted to hear me, just as much as I wanted him to hear me. What happened between us didn't happen because we were weak. Ridge didn't run his hand up my jaw and around to the back of my head, simply because I was in front of him and he was in the mood to make out. He didn't press his body against mine because he thinks I'm attractive and knew it would feel good. He didn't part my lips with his because he enjoys kissing and knew he wouldn't get caught. Despite how hard we tried to fight it, all of those things happened between us because our feelings for each other are becoming so much stronger than our desire. Desire is easy to fight, especially when the only weapon desire possesses is attraction. It's not so easy when you're trying to win a war against the heart. The house has been quiet since I woke up more than an hour ago. The more I lie here and allow myself to think about what happened, the less I want to face him. I know if we don't get it over with, the confrontation will only be harder the longer we wait. I reluctantly get dressed and head to the bathroom to brush my teeth. His bedroom is quiet, and he usually has late nights that result in late mornings, so I decide to let him sleep. I'll wait it out in the living room. I hope Warren and Bridget are either occupied with each other in a bed somewhere or still asleep, because I don't know if I can take either of them this morning. I open the door and walk into the living room. I pause. Turn around, Sydney. Turn around and go back to your room. Ridge is standing at the bar. However, it isn't the sight of Ridge that's rendered me completely immobile. It's the girl he has his arms around. It's the girl he's pressed against. It's the girl he's looking directly at, as if she's the only thing that has, does, and will ever matter to him. It's the girl who planted herself between me and my maybe someday. Warren exits his bedroom and sees them standing together in the kitchen.
Hey, Maggie, I thought you weren't coming for a couple more weeks.
Maggie spins around at the sound of Warren's voice. Ridge's eyes move from Maggie over to me. His body tenses, and he stands up straighter, putting a slight distance between the two of them. I'm still immobile, or I'd be putting distance between myself and all three of them.
I'm about to leave,
Maggie says and signs simultaneously, facing Warren. Ridge steps away from her, then quickly breaks his gaze from mine and refocuses his attention on Maggie.
My grandfather was admitted to the hospital yesterday. I got here last night.
She turns and gives Ridge a light peck on the lips, then heads for the front door.
It's nothing serious, but I'm staying with him until they release him tomorrow.
Oh, man. Sorry about that, Warren says. But you'll be here the weekend of my party, right?
Party? Maggie nods and takes a step back toward Ridge. She circles her arms around his neck, and he wraps his arms around her waist, two simple movements that completely shatter entire sections of my heart. He rests his mouth against hers and closes his eyes. He brings his hands to her face, then pulls back and leans in again to kiss her on the tip of her nose. Ouch. Maggie exits the apartment without ever having noticed that I was standing here. Ridge closes the door behind her, turns around, and brings his eyes back to mine with an unreadable expression.
What are we doing today?
Warren asks, moving his head back and forth between Ridge and me. Neither of us breaks our stare to respond to him. After several seconds, Ridge makes the slightest movement with his eyes, motioning toward his bedroom. He turns to Warren and signs something, and I walk back to my room. It's amazing how many reminders I've had to give my organs in the last 3 minutes that should be basic, common knowledge. Breathe in. Breathe out. Contract, expand. Beat, beat, pause. Beat, beat, pause. Inhale, exhale. I walk to the bathroom and head for Ridge's bedroom. It was obvious he wants to talk, and I still think confronting it now is better than waiting. It's definitely better than not confronting it at all. The journey across the bathroom is only a few feet and should take no longer than a few seconds, but I somehow stretch it out for 5 whole minutes. I place a nervous hand on his doorknob, then open it and walk into his room. He's walking in at the same time as I'm closing the door to the bathroom. We pause and stare at each other. These stare-downs are gonna have to end because my heart can't take much more. We both walk to his bed, but I pause before sitting down. I assume we're about to do some serious talking, so I hold up my finger and turn to get my laptop out of my room. He's sitting on his bed with his laptop when I return, so I sit, lean against the headboard, and open mine. He hasn't messaged me yet, so I type something to him first. Me, are you okay? I hit send, and after he reads my question, He turns his face toward mine and appears slightly puzzled. He turns back to his computer and begins typing. Ridge. In what sense? Me. All of them, I guess. I know it was probably difficult seeing Maggie after what happened between us, so I just wanted to know if you were okay. Ridge, I think I'm a little confused right now. Are you not pissed at me? Me, should I be? Ridge, considering what happened last night, I would say so. Me, I have no more of a right to be mad at you than you do to be mad at me. I'm not saying I'm not upset, but how will being mad at you help us work through this? He reads my message and expels a huge breath, leaning his head back against the headboard. He closes his eyes for a moment before lifting his head and responding to me. Ridge, Maggie showed up last night an hour after I got back to my room. I was convinced you were going to barge in and tell her what a jerk I am for kissing you. Then, in the kitchen earlier, when I saw you standing outside your door, I was bracing myself. Me, I would never tell her, Ridge. Ridge, thank you for that. So, what now? Me, I don't know. Ridge, can we not do the thing where we brush it under the rug and act like it never happened? Because I don't think that's going to work for us. I have a lot I need to say, and I'm scared if I don't say it right now, I'll never say it. Me, I have a lot to say, too. Ridge, you first. Me, no, you first. Ridge, how about we go at the same time? When we're both finished typing, we'll hit send together. Me, deal. I have no idea what he's about to say to me, but I don't let it influence what I need to say to him. I tell him exactly what I want him to know. Then I pause and wait for him to finish typing. When he finally stops, we look at each other, and he nods, and we both hit enter. Me. I think what happened between us happened for a lot of reasons. We're obviously attracted to each other. We have a lot in common, and under any other circumstance, I honestly believe we'd be good for each other. I could see myself with you, Ridge. You're smart, talented, funny, compassionate, sincere, and a little bit evil, which I like. Winky face. And last night, I can't even describe it. It is by far the most I've ever felt while kissing someone. Although the feelings aren't all good, there's a lot of guilt mixed in there too. So as much as the thought of us being together makes sense, it also makes no sense whatsoever. I can't leave a relationship with as much hurt as I did and expect to find happiness within a few short weeks. It's too fast, and I still want to be on my own no matter how right something might feel. I don't know where your head is, and honestly, I'm scared to hit enter on this message because I want us to be on the same page. I want us to work together to try to push past whatever it is we're feeling so we can continue to make music and be friends and pull ridiculous pranks on Warren. I'm not ready for that to end, but if my being here is too hard or makes you feel guilty when you're with Maggie, I'll leave. Just say the word and I'll go. Well, I guess you can't really say the word. You could type the word and I'll go. Sorry for the lame joke at your expense, but there's just too much seriousness going on right now. Ridge, first and foremost, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I put you in that position. I'm sorry I couldn't be stronger in that moment. I'm sorry I broke my promise to you about never becoming a hunter. But I'm mostly sorry for leaving you crying on your bed last night. Walking out and leaving that whole situation unresolved was the worst move I could have made. I wanted to come back and talk to you, but when I finally worked up the courage, Maggie showed up. If I knew she was coming, I would have warned you. After what I did to you last night and then seeing the look on your face when you saw us together this morning, I knew it was one of the most hurtful things I could have done. I have no idea what's going through your head, but I have to say this, Sydney. No matter how I feel about you, or how much I think we could work, I will never,
ever leave her. I love her. I've loved her since the moment I met her, and I'll love her until the moment I die. But please